but this particular one, it was just down an alley. And then the building itself looked uniquely weird in just the look of the building and then the glow that it was giving off.
Hello, friends. Welcome to another episode. Joining me today is one of my biggest photography inspirations. He's a guy that I really admire, and he takes a lot of really cool Tron-looking photos. Fair warning, this does get fairly camera nerdy for a little bit, but we talk about lots of things that go alongside the creative arts. So I hope you give it a go. Please welcome to the podcast, Mike Norris, aka Beta Pixels. I can't believe you've got different angles on your FaceTime. There was like a straight on and now there's like an overhead shot.
Yeah, that camera needs to ultimately move, but I'm waiting on upgrading my work laptop slightly, and I'm going to bring in another monitor and I'm going to have to figure out what to do.
Are you still working from home?
For the most part, it varies. Some weeks I don't go in at all. Other weeks I'll go in like 3 or 4 days. Kind of depends who's in the office and what's going on.
The amount of pushback that some companies are really making now against working from home is starting to be the telling thing of which companies you would choose to work for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thankfully for mine, we've always been remote first in that they really didn't care. Like we have a couple of locations, but like it's not mandatory that anyone goes in.
Yeah, I suppose with tech, quote unquote, it's been the case for a long time where you don't need to be anywhere. You know, like the remote tools and stuff that you can use far exceed anything else, don't they?
Mm-hmm. And it's nice for when you do take vacations, because I'll go visit my sister and stay there for, you know, a week or two at a time. And depending on the time of year, potentially take very little vacation, because we'll just, you know, we all work during the day, and then in the afternoons and evenings, we'll still hang out and do stuff.
Yeah, you could be like a whole digital nomad, Mark. You could travel the world and do all that thing and post Instagram pictures from the beach.
Just become an influencer.
that whole drop shipping, you know, like making loads of money thing is still really rife on Instagram, isn't it? You know, like having these terrible products or terrible businesses that don't really own anything or deliver much, but, you know, just pour money into adverts and just post things from the beach or how you're helping people in poorer countries or whatever.
Yep. And it's kind of sad because you just start to assume that all of that is a scam or that it's crap. Like even more recently, there was I've been getting back into mountain biking and stuff.
Yes, I saw on Instagram that, in fact, I stumbled across your personal Instagram, not your Beta Pixels one, and saw that you were hitting the trails quite hard.
Yeah, and now my feed is, it's purposely, like I've been following a number of like mountain biking accounts, but, you know, with the algorithm, you'll get even more suggested.
Yes.
And like one of those accounts it seems like weekly, but I'm sure it's probably more like monthly, but it's still a lot. Like they give away a bike and that part seems legit. But when you don't, obviously it's a high, like a lot of people will, you know, comment and do the thing to get an entry to win a bike. And if you don't win, it seems like there's a not very much participation, because I think I've commented on, you know, like 3 or 4. And of course don't win, but every single time, I get like a high percentage discount code for, you know, the store that that account works through or ships through or whatever.
Okay, right.
Yeah. And you go there and the store looks fine. It looks basic, but you have the discount code. You order this stuff. And like one of the times it was like half off a pair of like goggles,
okay,
like downhill yeah. goggles. And they were normally like $150. And it's like, all right, half off isn't bad. We'll give this a shot. And then you get them and it's like, these are worth maybe $8. So it's like, all right, I see how they're getting the potential money. I mean, I'm sure they're making money, but the money to like give away a bike,
yeah.
you know, is because it's like super cheap, high margins. Because
the uptick in sales, I guess, from the thousands presumably that would comment on it and all get a discount code, then all think that they're going to get a bargain. But they're all like single sales, aren't they? They're all people that would never shop there again.
Yep, probably.
So it would eventually run out of like road, wasn't it? Eventually everybody would just be like, well, I'm not buying from here.
Yep, you would think. And so now it's kind of interesting just to, I still follow some of those accounts just to kind of watch what'll happen. Because it doesn't seem mm-hmm. sustainable.
Yeah, you see it a lot with, are you, in true Instagram style, once you show a vague interest in something, you get bombarded with stuff, don't you? And I made the mistake once of, I think, pausing on a advert for Apple Watch straps. You know, it was a really nice shot advert and was called like, it was the only thing I remember with the name is it was something London, you know, so it was obviously playing on the London thing, you know, like some brands just put London in their name to supposedly appeal to a demographic of people. And I was like, oh, this looks really nice. You know, it's shot, it almost looks like a watch store, you know, with all these kind of metal Apple Watch bands and all that sort of stuff. And I went on the, clicked on the link and had a look. And, you know, I suppose nowadays it's dead easy to start up, you know, like a storefront, isn't it, on Shopify and make it look legit. And I was like, oh, they're quite nice. But I went out of it, out of Instagram, Googled the name, and then obviously instantly all the reviews come up that just say, don't order from this place, don't order from this place, it's a scam, everything like that. And I was like, oh, okay, thank God I didn't, you know, like go any further than just having a look through the store. But then you get completely bombarded with, you know, like every third thing on Instagram is now an Apple Watch strap. And you very quickly realize that I would imagine it's either the same people or, you know, somebody's seen it and just copied it, but it's the same products marketed the same way and just purely in it to just rip people off. And I would presume you get it with every single stretch of the market. It's just pump the money into the adverts and sell crap that you think you're going to bargain.
It's like very quickly established itself. Like Instagram/Facebook for that stuff has established itself to like just crap. It's like if I get sent a link from anybody and they're like, oh, this is cool, you should check it out. Like as far as like a product to potentially buy, if it is from a like a Facebook entity or a linked store or an Instagram store or something like that, I'm like, nah, that's a hard pass. Because if yeah. it's something that I really thoroughly want, I am. I've almost certainly researched it to some degree and like I'm going to the site for that thing. Like I'm not buying it through a big, you know, web store like what Facebook and Instagram have turned into.
Yeah. Yeah. Instagram obviously put in a whole tab in the app for shopping that is just, I mean, I usually click on it by accident but it's just complete cheap crap. You know, like no decent brands are selling. Well, I can't imagine any decent brands are selling through there because they don't need to, do they?
No, they really don't. And like the more with each like quarter and year that goes by, it's like, all right, it seems like one of those things they'll just sunset because it's like, is anyone really using this? And then they seem to double down on it. and like continuously like either bring it more forward in the app or at the very least shuffle it around. So it's always moving around and no matter where it's at, you're still accidentally tapping on it.
Yeah. Like the, without going too deep into the weeds, but I guess we probably should do with us both being kind of quote unquote photographer, at least in kind of dabbling in the art form, but they just either, obviously everything that in the Instagram app is just copied, isn't it? You know, like we've got stories from Snapchat, we've got reels from TikTok. We've got buying stuff from almost every, they've adopted it from themselves, haven't they? But reels is one where I'm still not convinced anybody uses it other than the fact that they have to use it. And now in the app, it's just completely rammed down your throat. You know, every photographer that I speak to doesn't want to use reels, doesn't like reels, doesn't like that reels appear in the timeline, yet makes videos on YouTube telling people to make reels to be more prominent to get more followers. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I feel like that there is no choice but to make reels, but there clearly is. If no one made them, then we wouldn't see them ever again, would we?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. I know that you go through the same dilemma that I do every so often in getting up to a level of fed up with Instagram and as far as like sharing photos and what you're looking to get out of it. And then you start shopping around like, all right, it's been, you know, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever it is since I last looked at the scene. Like, what service should I use? And like keep bouncing around and trying all kinds of things out. And, the reality is there's just nothing really good out there anymore that's got a super large following or that feels engaging. Like the consistent ones that I use now are, yeah, still just Instagram. And I kind of go, I said consistent, but the next most consistent, which is kind of bursty, is Reddit, actually. Because I tend to out of the, besides that one, there's also Twitter, which I use for photography, but I really don't ever get any interaction there. If some of the other photographers that I follow, if they have one of their posts that says, hey, you know, share your photos of X, of this particular topic or theme,
yeah,
and I'll share some. Those will usually get some retweets and some likes. But as far as like commenting and talking about the pictures or whatever, just, you know, actual conversation based off of it, mm-hmm. never happens. Whereas like Reddit, it actually kind of does, which is weird. I didn't expect that one to be quite as, and by no means is it a lot, but there's at least something there, like people commenting on it or talking about it, which was kind of a surprise, which is why I keep going back there, is because at least there's some dialogue after, you know, you post the picture into the void.
Yeah, I guess it depends largely on what you're looking for. I'm the same as you. I go backwards and forwards on Instagram, and, you know, my photography also comes in bursts, you know, where I've got a lot of time to do it and a lot of kind of motivation to do it. And I'm really set out on getting better. So therefore that's reflected in my Instagram. And I think Instagram makes me hit a wall at a point where I either don't really get a lot out of it, therefore I stop taking less photos or sharing less photos. Or I just feel bad for using Instagram. So therefore I just don't share as many photos. It's interesting you talk about Reddit, because it's something that I've thought about, and I do use Reddit a lot passively, you know, and especially when you're kind of researching gear and, you know, when you're trying to get opinions on stuff, it's a real nice place to kind of go to, as long as you know, stick to the right subreddits and stuff like that. But it's something like Photo Critique, which is a quite an interesting one, although you have to kind of take everything with a pinch of salt, was super helpful when I was kind of first starting out. I think I posted one or two photos in there, but it was really helpful, you know, to look at other people's photos and then read the critique on it, because it didn't feel so bad, you know, because it can really put you off. But are you posting your photos in like specific, you know, like camera things, or is it local subreddits or what?
Yeah, it's usually local subreddit. Well, I'm sorry. So there are not immediately local to where I live, because it's not a huge area, but some larger cities have their own subreddits that I'll post in. And then there's just a multitude of like themes, more or less, of like subject matter. Like there's a couple of different nature ones or landscapey type ones that I like to post in. A more approachable one that's got like all kinds of people posting pictures, and usually not, I guess it depends on the day, but it's not just strictly like higher quality edited photos, but like, I Took a Picture is one of them. That's, there's a lot of that just post from your phone, and that's more so like interesting photos or cool photos, mm-hmm. as opposed to like really artistic photos, but you'll see those in there too.
Yeah.
There's car ones.
Cause your photography style is quite eclectic, really. You haven't really zeroed in on anything that you specifically, you know, want to focus on.
The only thing I can say that I definitively really like to shoot, and if I had to pick a favorite, it would probably be a still rather vague nighttime photography, because that could be astro, that could be like low light portraits. I mean, there's a lot that could be, but I tend to like walking around downtown in cities at night, just because there's a lot going on. You know, all the lights, reflections,
neon signs and stuff tend to be your favorites, don't they? Yeah.
Oh yeah. We just don't really have many around here.
Do you find that like super sketchy wandering around in the dark in cities with your camera gear?
Sometimes. Usually I'll do that the most is in Milwaukee, and I feel pretty good there. It's a city in Wisconsin, the state of Wisconsin, mm-hmm. in the U.S. Chicago, I've only ever done it with a friend. But there's times it feels a little sketchy. Again, one of the places I went with a friend was a city called Gary, Indiana, for some abandoned photography, because it's a notorious city that's kind of popular for that, because it was much larger in the industrial era, like 30s through the 60s. And they had one primary large, like steel factory or company there. And it's still around, but it's dramatically less busy than it used to be. And like the population has just tanked, and it went from like a peak of 160-ish, like 160,000, down to, I think it's below 75 now. So it's just cratered in the last couple of decades. And it's one of those places where if you're into abandoned photography, it's amazing, because so many places, it's hard enough just to find a building that is aged and has been left and not torn down. But then it's usually guarded in some form or fashion. It's really visible, so it's hard to go into it without getting caught.
Yeah.
Whereas like Gary, there's just so many abandoned buildings. Literally no one cares. And like you could pick one, walk into it. You don't have to hide. Like you can just go into any building you want, which is awesome in that regard.
Yeah, sounds cool. Because I think in the States, it's like trespassing is like criminal, isn't it? I think you can be seriously prosecuted for trespassing, yeah?
Yeah, and depending on the city and the type of building, yeah, it can be either a slap on the wrist and hey, don't come back, or like you could go to jail, straight to jail.
Yeah, whereas in the UK, you know you see these like trespassers will be prosecuted, but there is other than like civil law, you know, like they would have to prove that you cost them money, there's no kind of trespassing laws. You know, if you went anywhere, they would have to prove that, you know, you being there cost them money and then take you to civil court. There's no kind of like prosecution it's super hard to do. There's a lot of like people that do that weird thing where they stand on top of buildings and do like dangle off the edges and stuff. Like there's quite a few notorious UK people that do that quite often. I've always found whatever they call it, Urban X, you know, that sort of photography really interesting, but I just don't have the balls to do it. I guess that Gary sort of place is one of the places, at least you can put your toe in it.
Yeah, to get to some of those, or a lot of those places, it just tends to be not safe, either physically because of the structure or how you have to get to it, or because you have a high chance of, you know, getting mugged or something.
Yeah.
which is, plus, I mean, this is less so a concern because there's plenty of places that have been just super popularized over the last few years as Urbex has gotten really popular. And so, you know, so many different people have gone to the same spots and shot the same thing. On one hand, some are kind of overshot. I get it. But when it's you and it's like one of your favorite spots and you stumble upon it, it's still fun.
Yeah, that sort of thing is something that I do think about. I mean, I've tended to, you know, stick to, while my photography was fairly crap, I just took pictures of things, you know, because it was easier for me to kind of learn the things and, you know, take the pictures of flowers and people and buildings and stuff. Whereas I've started in recent, purely because of the people I've been exposed to, I've got a lot of inspiration from like street photography. And there's a lot of kind of, you know, really over used trends, you know, the type of photos that you take, but it's not generally anything that I really worry about because, you know, unless I haven't shot it before, I don't really care. Because I don't do it for the likes and the feedback and the and any kind of reward. I'm not going to sell any prints. Do you know what I mean? Oh yeah, I have noticed that your photography has kind of, I don't know, dropped off from the kind of initial real motivation that you were going forward. Are you still taking loads of pictures but just not sharing them?
No, it's been kind of a dry spell, honestly. For a number of reasons, work is the last 6 months. Definitely. I got a new role at work and that's been taking a lot of time. The resurgence into getting into mountain biking was to do something more physical, but also something that, the wife and I could do together.
Okay.
And then those are like two big reasons. I just haven't gone many places. I haven't by any means lost drive to do it. I really want to go places and take pictures. And actually coming up, like the summer's going to be, I think, pretty exciting. Going back to Milwaukee in a couple weeks. And then after that, the one I'm most excited about, it's probably tied, is going back to Boston, which I was there for the first time back in 2019, and it was just before, it was like right at peak, like I'd been doing mobile photography for a while, and it was like peak mobile photography, and I was like right on the edge. I'm like, oh, it was just before I got started getting, you know, camera gear.
Yeah.
And there were a number of scenarios and stuff, like looking back on Boston after I'd gotten camera gear, I was like, man, I really wish I had this in Boston. I want to go back there someday so I can shoot more pictures and different types of stuff that couldn't do with a phone. And so going back to Boston late July, and then in August, the family's going to Hawaii, which I've never been. So that'll be a lot of fun as far as pictures go. So
you're packing up a suitcase full of camera gear and taking it on the holiday with you?
Pretty much. I'm taking one big bag of camera gear and one bag for clothing. And the bag of clothing, they can put anywhere in the plane they want. I don't care, but that camera bag is staying with me.
It's one of the things that you don't really think about until you get super into photography. It's like, we go places as a family and I'm like, oh, I really want to take my camera, but it just, it's weird. You know, like, I've never ever taken a camera, you know, like on holiday or vacation or with the family, because it would feel strange. And obviously we had a conversation the other day that I bought, just sold everything camera related. I had like 7 lenses, you know, the A7, C that I had and everything that goes with it, and just bought an X100V, which is like a tiny little Fujifilm camera, APS-C mm-hmm. sensor, fixed lens and stuff. And that has been, you know, like I can fit that in my pocket, so I don't feel so stupid taking it everywhere. And I think that's mm-hmm. made me take more photos than ever. Because as small as I could get down, you know, like a full frame camera, it's still a bit of a bulk to kind of carry around.
That it is. My I don't think I have a lot of gear, but because I can fit everything in a backpack. It's a
yep.
large, heavy backpack, but it's one yeah. backpack. And that's kind of the limit. But yeah, and that's the thing, is when I go to some of these places that I haven't been before, and I'm going specifically for shooting, I pretty much always overpack in that. Mm-hmm. Like I have a good friend that I'll go shooting with, every so often, and he's the exact opposite. He's super minimalist in taking like a body and a lens. Yeah. Whereas I will be like, no, like you don't know, you might need this lens, so I'll put it in the bag because you don't know. And I am like, it's easier to have it and not need it than be like, oh man, I missed this shot because I didn't have this lens or whatever.
But you also miss loads of shots trying to decide which lens that you should. Oh, and crap, I should have this lens on it. And by the time the situation's gone as well. So it's both sides of the coin, isn't it?
Yep. I've gotten a little bit better in that I used to very often, like I'd be walking and have like my 35-150, which is my main lens that I use probably 90% of the time.
That Tamron 35-150 is definitely going to help now, isn't it?
Yeah, I love that lens because it's pretty much all the normal ranges I would typically shoot in. Because my first lens was a 28-200, and I still actually have that lens. I just don't use it anymore, hardly. Because it was it did everything and got pretty much all the ranges that I would normally need. But then as I got other lenses that were just optically better, I stopped kind of using that one. But the 35-150, like I would leave that on most of the time, but I was kind of bad for a while of if I saw something even remotely, I was like, oh, I want my, you know, my really long zoom lens for that. I'd quickly take the picture and then immediately put the bag down again, swap back to the lens I had, get going. Yeah. 3 minutes later, do the same thing. And I don't quite do that as much anymore. I tend to just pick a lens and stay with it for a while, but I do tend to overpack. And even thought about, like, the only time when I don't do that is if I'm shooting at night, because I only need two lenses for that. Or I'm sorry, two things for that. The 35-150, because that's the only thing I'd be shooting with at night anyway, because it's a good low light lens. And then, the A7 III is just better at night than the R4. So like I have no need for the R4 unless I was going for, which I don't do very often. If like, oh, I'm really thinking of this specific spot and I want to do a long exposure at this angle with this thing. Usually that type of shot is something where like you spend a lot of time thinking about it. You go and maybe spend, you know, up to an hour or more just trying to get the right look for that one long exposure, but you're just doing that one shot and then you're done. I pretty much never do that. It's usually very happenstance. Like I'm walking around, I'm like, oh, this would be a cool shot. Mm-hmm. And then try to bust out a long exposure or two. And that's the other thing too, is it's kind of a pain to carry a tripod around.
Yeah, I hate tripods with a passion. You know, like there's a whole joke of like James Popsis that's just like, oh, I shoot handheld all the time. But I physically refuse to take a tripod. You know, I would rather miss a shot than carry a tripod around with me. I'm sorry. It's just not going to happen.
I got not too long ago a really like baby tripod. It's probably about this tall, but it's just meant for... I got it at the time for a very quick trip that didn't materialize, but I wanted something that this quick trip was going to be so small that I was like, all right, I've got my bag of camera gear. And like I was going to go to like a 4-day super fast trip to Iceland. And we're going to use the couch surfing app. So like it was super cheap tickets. It's like no money on hotel. Both my brother-in-law and I are, you know, are active. We'll walk and hike forever. We're able-bodied. Yeah. So it's like, we don't need much. We're not going to spend much while we're there. I'm like, shoot, I wonder if I could, it's like, could I wear all the clothing I needed to get there? And then in the couch surfing place, we could just take off what we didn't need for the day, leave it there. I was like, could I go with just my camera bag? And like, oh, what am I going to do about the tripod? Because one of the things with the super cheap tickets is that, of course, like you pretty much pay for every bag. Like, well, I don't want to take a bag just for a tripod. And so I got this little travel tripod of sorts that was beefy enough that it would at least hold a full body camera for the purpose of if I wanted to do, I mean, at least in Iceland, it's like, oh man, I want some long exposures there.
Yeah, yeah. You have to shoot those pretty landscapes and stuff, don't you?
Yeah. Which I haven't done that in a long time, really.
It's interesting that the A7 III is a lot better in low light than the R4. I guess that's just megapixel count, is it, that causes that?
Mm-hmm. Now, if I'm doing something like a long exposure, I'll go back to the R4. Because really the biggest problem with the R4 is because it's such high megapixel, just it doesn't handle noise and higher ISO as well as the A7 III. So if it's a shot where I can do a long exposure, then generally put the ISO all the way down to, you know, like 100 or whatever the base is for that camera. Mm-hmm. And you're fine because it'll be brighter by the nature of the long exposure. And then if you use like the high ISO compensation or high ISO feature, I forget exactly what it's called, but all it does is basically take another equally long shot with the shutter closed and then compares that to the image you actually took to look for noise in the image to kind of like remove it from the image.
Okay.
So for like those specific types of shots, I'll actually go back to the R4 because it's just going to be a bigger image to work with. But like just walking around shooting stuff like street photography at night, that's definitely the A7 III. Cause like you can run that up to 2000 or 4000 and generally it's completely fine. The R4 at 2,000 to 4,000 and above, like you start to have to, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, depending on the shot of like what you're shooting, the noise will just be more apparent, and or you have to spend more time trying to remove that with some piece of software. Like Lightroom's noise reduction is mediocre. And there are a couple of other apps that are really good at it. It's just I don't do it enough to justify either the outright cost or the subscription for those.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if I was doing more of it, I would also get some of that software because it really, like some of it is dark magic. It's amazing how much it takes out.
Last time we spoke on the, it must have been one of your podcasts, you were telling me about, you know, AI features and all that sort of stuff in things. We were obviously having a conversation about, I think, the iPhone at the time and, you know, Pro Raw and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that I suppose Adobe don't really need to push that stuff, do they? Because they've already got this established base. But I have seen more and more people switching to, you know, other options because noise reduction and you know, just generally being able to tweak the photos is better in some just one-off cost applications now.
Mm-hmm. The standout feature for me now is, or at least if I were shopping around for a new piece of software, would be based around like noise reduction and stuff, because that's either whether it's at night or if I'm shooting like wildlife, for example, that's another one where you typically have a lot of, or a higher ISO, just because of it can often be dark when you're, it, or it comes across as dark when your shutter speed is so high to capture wildlife that you just naturally have a lot of ISO. But the Adobe has at least made strides in, Lightroom is so good at so many other things, and it now has a pretty good feature parity between CC and Classic. And a lot of those, pretty much all those features are available on iOS devices, and by extension, mobile devices, that it's nice to have everything available, because up until recently, well, more recently when I got my camera gear, I did all of my editing on my phone, or an iPad for a little while. And now I've kind of flip-flopped back to, I do most all of it on the computer, but it's really nice to be able to pick up and just do pretty much anything I would do on the computer on the phone as well. And this last big update that Adobe had, it's probably been 4 or 5 months at this point, but they brought, their filtering got way better. Like the way you can,
the masking and stuff is really good in Lightroom now.
Yeah, it got way better in CC, which was kind of one of the only reasons I would still open up Classic. And now that they've improved it, I don't even have Classic installed anymore.
Really? You were a diehard Classic fan because of the calibration and stuff that you used to love tweaking with before.
Yep. At first, it was kind of weird. It's one of those knobs, and it's like, oh, but I don't have this knob to turn, and I think it'll be important. But then after a while, I realized that I had enough of the presets that I had used that feature, have like adjusted calibration profiles.
Okay.
And like making modifications of those presets and saving them as new presets gave me a good spread. And then just because the feature isn't there in the GUI and like surface to you to actually adjust the calibration, if you have a preset that has done that, it will still apply that in the background.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So like I've gotten to a point where like all the looks I tend to like with those calibrations adjusted for different, looks, I've got them all already in presets. So like I can get close enough. Like I don't necessarily need to. I at least haven't felt the need yet to, like, oh man, I really need to go in there and adjust this color calibration.
Yeah, which was the one thing that if I could pick out of your, like, your Instagram feed is your ability to make, like, the colors. You know, your images are generally dark or darkish. I guess the modern term is moody, isn't it? Your photographs are moody, but you have this ability to just, like, make the colors pop out of it. And I guess that is the calibration and stuff sliders that you've been tweaking and playing with and getting the look that you want out of them.
That and it's not really related to color, but the other thing that I've found that's a lot of fun is with the new masking abilities, like pulling out, usually it's in the highlights and it's just accentuated at night because there's a lot of dark areas and then you've got like neon and stuff, but the ability to easily get like those highlights and brighter areas and adjust things like the clarity or other things to make it feel either like more dreamy or hazy or floaty, but it's just that's been a lot of fun.
So you're masking like a certain luminance, like in the Lightroom you can do it, you can mask by color and use the like select subject, but you can do it by color and luminance, so you're just selecting like a highlight area and obviously then tweaking the colors and stuff in there. Not to give away like your dark magic and your secret now, but
it's no secret. There was because I had seen some other photographers get that kind of look, and in watching their videos saw what they were doing, and at the time this was like well over a year ago, but it was when like that stuff wasn't in CC yet, so you had to use Classic because Classic had that ability. And it was kind of like one of the reasons I begrudgingly would install Classic, because I'd install it or I'd open it and be like, God, this looks like it hasn't changed since 97. Like, I hate this app.
It probably
hasn't. But it had all the features in it. It was like, oh, I wish they would bring it, you know, bring that specific thing to CC. And finally they did. So now I really don't use CC Classic anymore. Plus, it was a mild pain in keeping everything synced. I found out the hard way that there is one very specific way you can sync things between both old and new and still maintain full size images. And it was just kind of a pain in the whole editing process to like set up a new folder or do a thing in CC. So then it would sync properly to Classic. I forget even what they called them. It was like shared albums, online albums, cloud synced albums, something like that. But yeah, if you didn't sync the right way, it would cap the resolution of those images that were synced to the cloud, and then those would sync back down to CC. But so you'd get like a way worse image. I did that the first time initially, and I ended up having to like blow away a bunch of stuff and then like re-upload a ton. A different way to get it to sync the proper way so you could maintain the full res images in both places. And then the other issue with that is just that Classic, it just requires more local storage, whether it's on your device or like a NAS or something on your network, can get a little dicey with CC. And if you open it, it's not, you know, connected, and it's like, ugh.
Yeah, it's a massive pain. I've toyed with the idea of always, you know, you watch these videos on like editing. It's something that I just hate about editing. I'm just not good at it, and I just can't be bothered to sink time to learn in. So, of course, you watch the videos, and everybody uses Classic. Don't know. I think it's just a muscle memory thing, isn't it? You know, the photographers that have been around for years. But I've tried a couple of times, and I just can't get used to it, so I just stick to whatever. Well, I think it's Photoshop Lightroom now, isn't it? It was Lightroom Mobile, and then it was Lightroom CC and God knows what else. But CC does it more than enough for me. You know, it keeps my photos in the cloud. I don't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm. And if I were to move to another one, it would honestly be, I think it would be On One, because that's the next closest to what Adobe has created with the whole CC thing, where it's pretty much available on any type of screen and device, which is convenient, and the whole cloud backup feature. Although On One, because they have a similar subscription feature that you can get that gives you like all the apps and the cloud storage and mobile apps as well. The only downside is that there is a larger feature disparity between the desktop and mobile clients. So it's not like Adobe, where you can pretty much do everything on your iPhone that you can do on your MacBook Pro. I think On One has been continually making strides on that front and improving it. And at some point, I think they'll have a feature parity, I'm sure. It's just they don't have it right now. And then part of it, too, is even before I got into photography, over the years, I've just used Photoshop and Lightroom for a lot of different things. So I know where everything's at. And coming into something as potentially complex as a photo editing software, On One isn't difficult. It's just super different. And then even to that degree, like Capture One, because I've looked at potentially using that one, because that's another popular one that a lot of people... Yeah. Or that has a big following. And the only reason I never really jumped into that one was just because the lack of mobile support. And these days, honestly, that's probably not a huge deal if I sat down and thought about it, just because I do very little editing on my phone these days. So I don't necessarily need mobile access, but it's just a nice to have that I haven't given up yet.
Yeah, I like that I can plug a SD card in, you know, like if I'm in a spot, transfer it straight onto my iPad, and you know, it's proper editing suite on there. And if I just leave it like that, it'll sync to my laptop, you know, when I get home, and it'll be there ready. You know, it just helps with those things. If there's something you just want to share straight away, or you want to edit, or you know, you sat on a train on the way home, I've done quite a few times, is just start to go through things and help it. It's taken Adobe ages to realize that, you know, like mobile's a thing. They had like a billion different apps at one stage, but that it seems to me like they're finally getting their shit together and actually realizing that all these things, like Classic, I mean, Classic they would never get rid of, just there would be complete uproar, but at least they're trying to get their ducks in a row.
Did you ever try out Luminar?
I had a look at it, and it was a bit like you were with Capture One, was just like, yeah, it looks good, but I'm not entirely sure what I'm doing.
Yeah, I honestly, in addition to not shooting a whole lot lately, I haven't really watched a lot of videos in YouTube in probably the last solid 6 weeks that are really photography focused. Mm-hmm. But even then, I just didn't get the impression, like, I don't feel like Luminar has the same following as, say, Adobe or Capture One. I'm sure there's a very vocal group that uses it because it's kind of a unique product out there. But that was kind of a flash in the pan for me. Like it got really popular like a year ago.
I'm sure it was you that told me about it. I had a look, and you know, it's an interesting thing. It's certainly powerful, but it was a bit too, it struck me as being a bit too, I don't know whether basic is the word, but it was aimed at like a certain type of person, which I'm not one of those, you know. There's features in there where you can like slim faces and, you know, make them beautiful and do all that sort of traditional Photoshop stuff you would do. And the UI just didn't really make sense to me in terms of the traditional, you know, like you would adjust light and all sorts of things that way. So I just quickly backed away from it. It was just like, no, I'm fine where I am. But I've not really heard anything else other than you mention about it.
There was, it came about and it burned brightly, but fast, because the initial need I had was, as I was starting to dabble with doing like portraits and stuff, it was a nice kind of mishmash of things you would typically do in Lightroom and things you would typically do in Photoshop. And it was pretty, like some of those features, like the face slimming, some of that, or like getting rid of blemishes, was just faster to do in that than to do it manually in Lightroom or Photoshop. And so that was great because Lightroom didn't really have those features. And Lightroom and Photoshop still don't really have some of those features. But the big catalyst for me moving off of Luminar was twofold. It was primarily when the M1 Max came out and I got one and I was running, that was my primary device. It took Luminar a long time to update for M1. And until they did, the performance was so terrible, it was unusable. Like I stopped using it largely because of that, because it was just such a stuttery mess. But also, even when they did update it, and I kind of started to get back into incorporating it into my workflow again, they took an approach of, it turned into, it felt very scummy, like as a new version would come out and issues or bugs would pop up, they would fix some of them, but longer running bugs or performance issues that would come about would only truly get fully patched in a new version that you had to buy. So it was it seemed like they turned it into, it wasn't a subscription service. It was a one and done, but it was basically a subscription. It's like, if you want to have the most updated one feature wise, as well as just bug fixes, you have to pay for the new version. And like, they'd have a big marketing campaign around each new version. Like it was a whole new thing. And it's like, guys, you, like they had a offshoot one that was like Luminar AI, and the AI for certain things was a little bit better. But I was like, guys, your product was already built around AI. So like, you can't just say, oh, this is the new AI one. It's like, well, it's all had AI.
It looks like now they have about 3 or 4 different versions of stuff. And I can't imagine they're cheap to just buy. That's the type of thing you realize that, you know, as expensive as Adobe is, at least they do actually do things the right way, you know, fix things and are constantly improving things rather than just holding stuff back and then charging you for the upgrade, which is truly an astonishing thing to do. Wow.
Yeah. Now they've got a Luminar Neo, and, you know, give it 6 months, there'll be another one and another cost to upgrade. It's like, if I'm going to pay a subscription, I'd rather just pay for, like, the way it kind of morphed into what it is. It was just like,
Yeah, the AI stuff features don't really interest me. The only thing that, which is kind of like a statement and also a question, Mike, is Sky replacement cheating?
I guess it depends on what you're categorizing as your goal. And what I mean by that is, like, cheating in the sense of it's not a photo per se anymore, because it's a composite. I think it crosses over, you start crossing over from photograph to like digital art, which,
yeah,
it's not like cheating in the scope of what photography is, but in the terms of digital art, it's just art.
Because, I mean, the Luminar thing, they were all like big into, you know, replacing objects, and you can, you could put like hot air balloons in the backgrounds, you know, all that sort of stuff, and they would put it in with AI and it looked super realistic and it all looked really fake. But I think the only thing that I ever boot a photo into Photoshop now is to do, you know, like a little sky replacement and stuff, but I cannot get it to look right. And, you know, it's always super obvious to me when it's been replaced. But I still do it, because typically the skies are boring or I've made a boo-boo and I just still want to share it on Instagram. I guess you don't really have to worry about that at night with your photos.
Yeah, the sky is typically very dark. And that's actually one feature that I remember when it came out, because it's pretty good, all things considered. But I typically don't pull photos into Photoshop. So, like, I haven't really used the sky replacement a whole lot. Although on the AI side of things, one thing that I do use a lot generally is within Lightroom, like, it's still AI, but it's just a different thing that it's doing. The subject detection, when you want to mask just the subject or the sky or something like that. Yep. It's just so much faster. And usually it's good enough that for what I'm trying to do typically is, you know, either lighten or darken or add some contrast to a sky. Is it pixel perfect to every edge of the sky? No. Are you going to notice that, you know, because I bumped up the, you know, made it a little lighter, made it a little darker? Also no, because it's a very broad generic change. So like, you're not going to notice, you know, a few pixels missing in the sky versus like if it was a dramatic sky replacement, you would want it to be quite a bit more accurate. But I use that feature all the time.
Yes. Yeah. I generally select the subjects and, you know, like either brighten them up a bit or darken the background down a bit, but you're generally talking, you know, like fractions of a stop. You know, we're not seeing like dramatic things, because like you say, it's not perfect, and it very quickly strays into, you know, ridiculous, the realms of the ridiculous. But I do see a lot of photographers with, you know, like tens of thousands of followers that just make these ridiculous edits, but they just seem to go down really well. I guess that's just the way of the world, is it? That things that are not strictly the way that you're quote unquote supposed to edit, people do actually still like.
Sometimes it's a weird one as far as what becomes popular. And then I try to look at it as come at it from an angle of, this looks really weird, I don't know why this is popular. And then think immediately, well, someone's probably stumbled along one of my pictures and be like, this looks like crap. Why did he edit it this way? It's like, all right, fine.
True. Yeah, very true. I guess you have to think about the flip side. What I typically see is either the clarity slider is trying to do some kind of weird HDR-esque type of thing, or it's like burn my retinas out, overexposed. But they seem to go down well.
The tried and true, along with the clarity slider, the tried and true, like HDR times 1,000.
I've never seen an HDR photo come out well. You know, like there's a lot of difference between, you know, like these HDR images and, you know, like exposure stacking or focus stacking or whatever you want to do. You can make it that look, you know, perfect, but I've never seen anything come out well that's, you know, like an HDR effect.
So that's something I have not done in a while. Like shoot an actual HDR, or even focus stacking for that matter, because typically that requires a tripod.
Yep.
And just where I've been with shooting, when I have been shooting, like in the last 12 months, it really hasn't been places where I've taken a tripod for much of anything. Sometimes for a focus stack, I've had a couple where I've been able to pull it off with no tripod and only doing like two focus points. Mm-hmm. But most of the time it just doesn't work. There's too much movement in the camera. Even if I'm holding what I think is pretty still, just the act of moving your thumb to tap, it moves the camera too much.
If you're anything like me, I'm a shaky mess anyway. I hold my camera up to take things and I'm like, Jesus Christ, I need to like take a breath or something.
That's now on the flip side, doing like slower shutter, one of my other photographer friends, he just always shoots at a really high shutter speed, even at like night, and we'll just start raising the ISO up. Like I get the rationale behind why he does that. But for me, like I'm coming at it from, I want less noise. And it's easier for me to like just hand hold it and drop the shutter speed. Like, is it going to be as crystal sharp as, you know, 800 or 1/800th or something like that? No, but it's also like I can hold it pretty damn still. And like the lowest I've gone unsupported, like fully handheld, like I've taken it down to a half a second and it's been usable.
Gee.
To go any lower than that, it drops off real quick. It's like you can brace or something like against a pole or a tree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I can get like another setting or two lower. But then once you get past like 2 seconds, it's like, all right, I've got to put that down.
Yeah, there's no way I could get down that low. I mean, I very rarely handhold would like shooting any lower than like 1/160. You know, like it would be, I would still be shooting fairly fast if I was doing that.
I'm dropping it way down.
Yeah. You must be like some Zen Buddhist. Like,
there's a high percentage of bad shots too. Like, because, I mean, out of like, especially that, like that's an extreme. I've had maybe a couple good ones that low handheld. More realistic is probably 1/8 of a second, where it's like, all right, if I take 10 pictures at 1/8 of a second, 3 or 4 of them are probably good as far as being clear and not blurred. The 1/2 a second, it's happened like twice where I tried probably 40 times to get it because I didn't have a tripod. I'm like, I really want this shot. I really want the ISO to be at whatever setting it was to be low enough to that I had to drop the shutter speed so much and spent a lot of time trying to get that picture. So it wasn't like a real quick, like, oh yeah, I do this all day, every day. It's like, no, that was, it often sucks.
Yeah, I think I just shake far too much. I guess it comes down to the trade-off, which is what most people would say, that they would probably rather have a slightly noisy photo than a blurry one, wouldn't they? But with enough practice, I guess you could get down there. I mean, I know some people that shoot a lot of street stuff, you know, and in the dark, and they would, you know, drop it down to what I would see as ungodly, like low shutter speeds, but some people are just naturally stiller, I guess, aren't they?
Yeah, I would say I'm fairly still. Because one of my photographer friends is also similar in your case, I think, and doesn't hold it very still. Like, it's not like he's, you know, sitting there and shaking like he has Parkinson's or anything, but
no,
it's
surprising
enough.
How little shake really affects the photo, isn't it? Like you were saying, just yeah. Tapping the, just because I usually do the whole thing, you know, like half down, take a breath, and like really try and just put the minimal amount of force on the button you can, because just literally just going on the camera would shake the camera, just get an unbelievably blurry shot.
The thing that has sometimes helped with that, I think it was last summer, I really got into like finding new ways to like use the buttons, like the custom buttons on the camera, and kind of moving around some of the mappings that I had. And one of the things I got into was back button focusing.
Yeah.
And it's not perfect, and it doesn't like fix that issue that you were just talking about, like where you just push the shutter button and it causes some small amount of movement. It did help not having to worry about pushing it down enough to get it to focus first and then take the shot, because you tend to be focusing more on the screen and the focusing and less on staying still and like being really deliberately careful with, you know, your button pressing. And that helped because I could get it focused, you know, with one of the buttons, and then just slowly bring the shutter down and not have to worry about the focus getting messed up anymore, because it would be locked in until focused I hit already. That focus button again. And now, like, it was kind of weird at first, but now I don't even think about it as far as like separating those two things. I'm a convert. It won me over. At first, I'm like, this seems terrible. Why would you take more clicks and things to do the same thing? And then after I kind of tried it, I was like, all right, I get it.
I guess the type of photography that you shoot, you've got a little bit more time to kind of like think about the shot, compose the shot properly, and do that sort of thing. I know with some types of photography, you know, it's like you have to have the camera all set up and it's just like click and you've got that one split second, haven't you? I guess at least with landscapes and cityscapes and the stuff that you typically had done, and a little bit with the car stuff, which I really liked when you had the whole car show, because of the colours and stuff, you can take a little bit more time over the shot. And I think that's what most people don't do, is they don't take enough time to think about the shot and really think about, you know, where's my eye? So where should it be, and really learn the exposure triangle properly. It's just point and click, isn't it?
Yeah, and that, speaking of car shows, that we are deep into the summer season. I have not been to a single one this year. Like, I've got a bunch on my calendar. I just haven't gone to any, and I'm looking forward to going to some later in the summer. Mm-hmm. But not only car shows, but some car museums, because that's another awesome spot, depending on the museum, where you can actually get some pretty good shots out of it. Did I ever post any? I'll have to share one of my albums with you, because there is a car museum. I think it's the Duesenberg Car Museum, that is about an hour-ish away from my house. And the, I think it's all of the museum is actually housed in this one building that used to be, it's from the teens era or the 1920s era. And they have this big French showroom that looks like it's straight out of the 1920s with like the marble and the lighting and all that stuff. Yeah. And then they've got like a lot of cars in that showroom that are from that era. And there's just some really cool shots from that room. So like sometimes it's like, oh, a car museum, they're going to be tightly packed together and people.
Yeah,
all
yeah,
over
yeah. That's
the place.
What you usually get is the car looks nice, but you can see seven other cars in the background.
Yep. But sometimes it works out. And they also had like this warehouse that was next door that was also, it was the last remaining one on the property because they used to have more, but it was an older style warehouse that they definitely don't build like this anymore. But just the look of it inside, and it was more of an overcast day, so that helped. But the way the lighting was and where the windows were, because it was an older style design of architecture, I so wish that that building could have been emptied out and then you could have brought like individual cars or anything, like just to shoot any product in that building because of the overall vibe and how everything looked with the lighting. It was so perfect. I was like, man, I like this warehouse just to use it for photos. It doesn't even have to have the cars in it.
Yeah, I really liked, my favorite was the Ferrari. I think that was like a couple of years ago, through the window of another car with like the bonnet of another one up. But yeah, the cars are something I miss. But your night stuff, do you typically just kind of shoot it and kind of stylize it later? Or is it something that you kind of think about while you're taking the shot? Because they all seem to take on this kind of neon, I don't even, like Tron sort of vibe, don't they? I guess that's just playing with the colors and just seeing something cool.
I think that's subconsciously my love for like cyberpunk type futuristic Tron-ish. Yeah, like that look I love. And so at night, that's kind of the vibe I'm going for, and which is why a lot of the stuff that I shoot at night typically has some sort of light source, like a neon sign or something that's very bold and bright, is because then I intend to make it look like it's out of cyberpunk.
Yeah, because a lot of the stuff, I guess, if you take a step back and look at, is typically, you know, there's nothing really going on, but with the colors and the neon signs and stuff, you can make it look, you know, really cool. You know, you've got a shot of just a coffee sign, but because it's dark and it's lit up red, it's just a cool thing to look at.
The probably on that cyberpunk theme, I think my most favorite one still is it's from a trip I did to Chicago a couple years ago. And I was walking around Chinatown. This particular shot was of nothing important. Like, I have other shots from Chinatown that are way better. But this particular one, it was just down an alley. And then the building itself looked uniquely weird in just the look of the building. And then the glow that it was giving off down the alley. And then after the fact, I didn't even notice it at the time. There was someone standing near the top in the stairwell, because that's what this was. It was a big stairwell going all the way up. And then it was like translucent windows. And they were like looking out, and like, it looks perfect, or it looks awesome. And but I didn't plan it to be that way. My original thing was like the glow of the light down this dark alley. And then I just, you know, color shifted the colors to be more cyberpunk looking. But that one was, I thought, going to be a throwaway, because like, oh yeah, light down an alley, blah, blah, blah. And then with that person in the window and the color shifting of lights, it ended up becoming like one of my favorites. I'll print it one of these days. That's something I've wanted to do more of, is start printing more of my pictures. One of my friends in his little photo editing spot in his basement, he's got kind of this little nook. And over the years, he's just printed out a lot of pictures. Most of them are just like, you know, 4x6s, something like that. And just completely covered the walls with all these different pictures. And I want to start doing that in my office on, you wouldn't, sadly, you like the current orientation of my desk, like you see the background with like the shelves and the lighting, so you really wouldn't see the pictures at all. But on the other side, like the walls are all black down here. I painted them black, and it would just look cool with, you know, just pictures everywhere. And so I think that's what I ultimately want to do, is just start printing them out and, you know, putting them up on the walls.
Yeah, it's something that I've been thinking about recently as well, is actually printing some stuff Thankfully, I'm finally getting to the stage where I'm actually, you know, like truly happy with the shots that I would be happy to print out and put on my wall. And I guess that's an achievement for any photographer, where you get to a stage where you're like 100% happy with stuff is cool. But I guess it's, I want to keep them somewhere other than on Instagram. And I think that's really my driving force.
Yeah. And that goes back to like, where do we put these things? And it feels like from a authentic standpoint, it honestly feels like Flickr is still that thing, but it's also kind of clicky in the sense of, I still see a lot of people getting comments and interaction on their photos, but it tends to be people that have been there since like the dawn of man. Mm-hmm. And they've got like just tens of thousands of photos. So like they're, you know, popular and they get a lot of traffic. But when I was dabbling with Flickr as well for a while early on, I mean, it was kind of a similar just posting into the void. I would post things and never get any response. And that was across the board, posting them to my own photo stream, getting involved in groups and stuff like that. It was just, it was both a packed arena and a ghost town all at the same time. It was so weird.
There's a few people that still hang around there. I still see some Flickr posts and stuff on Reddit, but you know, I like the idea of glass. There was another one that I used for a little bit that was, you know, trying to be an Instagram replacement and stuff, but I guess it all boils down to what you really want from it, doesn't it? Do you want likes and comments and stuff? Do you want to sell your photos? What do you really want to do with your photography? And why? It opens up a bigger question of why you really take photos in the first place, doesn't it? It ultimately decides where you want to post them.
Yep.
But at the minute, I've got this kind of spray all approach because I don't have a clue.
Yeah. And what I've wanted to do has changed as well. Like now I've kind of settled into a comfortable hobby, and I still enjoy it. I'm still driven to do it, but I don't feel like I have to. Like early on, it was like, oh, I'm trying to, I want people to see it. I'm trying to build up my name, build up my brand, blah, blah, blah. And so it almost turns into very quickly like a job, like you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to post so many times, blah, blah, blah. And now after, you know, sometimes life gets busy and not shooting as much, like it's taken it back to where it's more fun again, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Also just the, for lack of a better word, not caring that it's not necessarily popular or anything like that. Just being happy with posting whatever it is that I have and wherever I choose to post it.
Yeah, I think I share those feelings as well. And I think that's one of the reasons why I just got rid of, you know, all of my quote unquote, like proper gear and just bought this X100V. And it has made photography like fun again, because I haven't got to worry about like what lens is on my camera or, and a lot of the time, to be honest with you, I'm shooting in like aperture priority. You know, I'm just letting the camera do the work and just going, right, I want this one to have like a really shallow depth field, focus, click, you know, and you know, it's done. I can take it everywhere. I'm finding myself, you know, carry it around in my pocket. And it's just made me take more photos, which was the whole reason why I started getting interested in photography, because I wanted to take photos rather than, you know, worrying about carrying my camera around with me. But, you know, it's always in my pocket.
What do you think about the potential camera changes on the new iPhone?
I can see them putting in bigger sensors. There's only so far that 12 megapixels can go, but you know, I don't think I'm really interested. You know, I don't think a camera upgrade would be enough to push me into buying a new thing, because the camera on the 13 Pro that I have now is, you know, superb. I don't honestly know what else they could do.
I was pretty dead set that this was going to be the first year in, I think, ever that I didn't upgrade or change phones. If it, because for a while, a long while, I was doing, I was going back and forth between Android and iOS. But now, since I've been pretty much all iOS for the last 6 years, it was still a yearly thing. And I was going to stick with, because I have the 13 Pro Max, I was going to stick with that. The other dilemma I would typically have would be like size, in that right now with the Pro Max, I'm pretty much over the size and I want to go back to a smaller device. Mm-hmm. And then once I do that, after about 10 months, I'll be like, man, I missed the big screen. And then I'll upgrade the next cycle back to a bigger one. But the other thing too, with the, to your point, like it's good enough. And especially with other gear, like at no point ever do I really ever honestly pick up my phone first to take a picture for anything. So it's like,
no,
chasing the allure of a better camera. While it is a spec wise, a bigger upgrade than they've done to the camera in a long time, it's still one of those things like, okay, well, what am I actually going to do with it? The answer is probably nothing.
Yeah. It doesn't open up enough creativity. As good as the camera is, and you know, it can shoot, you know, I have total confidence that I can point it at whatever I want and it will take, you know, a good enough photo. Mm. But it doesn't offer me enough in terms of, you know, a fixed aperture lens can offer me.
Mm-hmm.
It will take a photo that, you know, it takes a photo of the thing, but I can't creatively really do much with that. And yes, there are people out there that only take photos on their iPhone or whatever it is, and they, you know, they look good, but I just don't think they're ever going to be able to open up and replace a real, quote unquote, real camera.
Yeah. And other side of that coin, or, well, not really the other side of the coin, but the thing too is like, for me, I really like low light photography. And that's one of those edge cases where just phones aren't great at that.
No, although you have this fake like night photo thing where it's just makes it all light again. And that's not really what you want from low light photography, is it?
Nope. And when you start getting into like the tools are there and the apps are there to do certain things like, okay, well, you know, the sensor is so small, you don't want your ISO to be up so high. So if possible, like, sure, you could do a longer exposure if it works out. But then you get into weird things with, like, sometimes you can just, you know, put your shoe up on a banister and then rest your phone against a shoe or something. But it's like, now you got to get a special tripod just for this. And it's like, nah, I'm not doing that. On the software side, even though like in a bigger, like a full frame camera, I mean, you've got the sensor dramatically larger, so that helps. But even though there's not really much of any software stuff going on, the RAWs that it produces just don't look as bad. Yeah. And I think the iPhone's gotten better as time has gone on with RAW photos, but it still then comes back down to a symptom of just the small sensor size, and that if I do a longer exposure and raw, no less, on a lower light shot, like there's going to be so much noise on it. And you really can't get that out. Not even the best software in the world is going to take that out. That isn't Apple's, because, and I say that because Apple's software chops are obviously pretty damn good. But that's proprietary to their photos, like within the Photos app. So like when I take a raw photo, all of that stuff is missing. And then if I go use a third party software to edit that raw photo, I am limited by how good their algorithms are. And it's generally not close to Apple's.
I can take some decent photos in like Pro Raw, but I've seen it let me down too many times for me to rely on it, you know, like weird smudges, or it's just gone overboard with the post-processing and stuff. And it does take a good enough shot, but it's not something that as a photographer, I would ever rely on completely. You know, I would end up taking like 8 photos just to make sure that it's taken, you know, half of the shot that I wanted to do. And like I said, again, you just can't do as much as you can creatively with the iPhone. You can get an apps and stuff, and you can start messing around with shutter speed and all that sort of stuff. But you know, I think it's gone as far as it would go in terms of me capturing snaps, but I don't think it would ever replace, you know, any sort of camera gear for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because besides low light, the other thing that I would say is fun to shoot is wildlife, believe it or not. And that's on the other, or a completely different end of the spectrum, in that a lot of times you just need a really big lens. And that's another thing that is an inherent limitation of a phone.
Yep.
At least for now. Like, at some point, will we get like a crazy optical, like 100x? Sure, probably at some point. But until then, it's like the two things I enjoy the most to shoot are both fall into those edge cases that the phone just doesn't cater to.
Well, we've waffled on for nearly an hour and a half, Mike. It's been nice to talk to you.
You too, man.
I'm hoping we might see some more Instagram posts from you, because it sounds like you're still taking photos, just not posting them.
Yes, yes. That's very true. But soon, we've got some photo trips planned, so
yeah, good.
Some more exciting stuff.
But people should definitely follow you on Instagram. You are at, however the Americans say it, Beta Pixels. Which is beta for the good old UK audience. and I think you're that pretty much everywhere, aren't you?
Yes. Twitter. Actually, Twitter's Beta Pixel. Someone took the plural.
Ah, damn it.
I know. Both my photography Twitter account and like my more personal or non-photography related Twitter account squatters on both of the preferred names.
You have like a million Twitter and Instagram accounts though, Mike, so you can't really complain, can you?
Well,
you have like Beta Pixel portraits and black and white and God knows what else.
Yeah, those other ones I really haven't posted on those in a while. The portrait one, that's something I'd kind of like to get into too, but like more portrait specific stuff, and then product specific stuff as well, like product type photography. But
product photography.
A little bit of the old times coming back from the tech review days, and like taking pictures of all of those products close up.
I've noticed you haven't been splashing out so much on lenses so much recently, because I guess that Tamron is just taken over from absolutely everything that you owned before.
Yeah, I really don't need anything else. The only, like, I've got my original lens, the 28-200, and then I've got my Tamron 70-180 still that I need to sell. I just haven't been very motivated to sell it because I have no use for it anymore since getting the 35-150. But like, I've got my three lenses that I pretty much take everywhere, and those three lenses cover everything because it's a 14-24. Ultra wide. I have the 35-150 for everything in between, and then I have my 150-600. So it's like I've got all the ranges I don't need anymore. But no. If I were to do more with like macro photography and product photography, I would want to get a proper macro lens, because the 150-600 actually has a pretty close focusing distance and can double as a crude macro lens. But it's still not as good as a proper macro lens.
Exciting times, Mike. Investing in stuff. But it's been great to talk to you for a little bit. And hopefully we'll talk again soon, buddy.
Yep, for sure.
Another great episode for you all to listen to. As you all know, I've run out of guests. But I'll find some, I hope. Until then, take the very best care of yourself, my friends, and I'll see you all very soon.